Welcome to the Religious Studies Project, hosted by Christopher Cotter and myself, David Robertson. This podcast is produced in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions, and you can visit our website at www.religiousstudiesproject.com. Today we are joined by Marcus Davidson, a PhD candidate in the Section for the Study of Religion at Aarhus University, and associate lecturer in the Institute for Religious Studies at the University of Leiden. Marcus is working on a PhD project on fiction-based religions, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Marcus, welcome.
Thank you very much, Chris.
So I suppose if we can just start off right from the top with this term, fiction-based religions, what do you mean by fiction, and what is a fiction-based religion?
Now, if we begin with fiction, that is obviously contrastable to non-fiction, and perhaps it's easier to begin with non-fiction. Non-fiction is texts, narrative texts and discursive texts, which claim to tell true facts about the real empirical world. So you can think about history books, but not only that, also newspapers that tell stuff about what is going on in the real world. Now, opposed to that, fiction and narratives, they tell about things that have events and persons which are not members, so to speak, of the real world, but who inhabit a fictional world, a play world, a fictional world, which the fictional text creates itself. Now, of course, in fiction, if you think about the Harry Potter books and movies as an example, a lot of things in the fictional Harry Potter universe will be imported, so to speak, from the real world. They speak English, for instance, London features and so on. But the events which are narrated and the persons like Harry Potter himself, they are fictional. Now, a fiction-based religion is a real religion in the real world, but one which takes much of its inspiration from a fictional text. A good example is the so-called Jediism, which is named after the Jedi Knights out of the Star Wars movies. So now Star Wars, that's a good example of a fictional text with a very elaborate fictional universe. Jediism takes over the Jedi Knight role or identity, I believe, in the Force from the Star Wars movies, and certain practices like meditation. And they base their identity and their religion largely, though not only, on a certain fictional text, in this case the Star Wars movies.
So this idea of a fiction-based religion, where did it come from? Is it a new idea?
Do you mean the phenomenon or the concept?
Both. Have fiction-based religions been around for a long time? And then has the terminology fiction-based religion, has that been around for a long time?
Right, I think that fiction-based religions like Jediism that we're talking about, that's a rather new phenomenon. And the phenomenon came first, and then scholars of religion have tried to figure out what it is. The first one to look at fiction-based religions was the Australian sociologist of religion, Adam Posamay, who calls this kind of religion hyper-real religions. And he distinguishes also between two phases in the development of the phenomenon itself of fiction-based religions. And if I paraphrase him a bit freely, he says that beginning from the 1940s, 50s, you have a number of religions that are vaguely or generally inspired, you could say, by fiction, especially science fiction. Scientology could serve as a good example. L. Ron Hubbard himself was a science fiction writer. Many of his ideas, which became part of the Scientology mythology, was taken both directly from his own fictional writings and were inspired in general by pulp science fiction. But here the relation between the science fiction genre or milieu science fiction writers in general and the religion that Scientology was more loose or indirect. A second generation, so to speak, of hyper-real religions, those that I call really fiction-based as opposed to just fiction-inspired religions, come much later with the internet. So we see them emerging in the 1990s, in the middle of that decade, and the Jediism is really the best example. And I would say that it is fiction-based because it is based on a specific fictional universe and the Star Wars universe, rather than just inspired by science fiction in general.
These fiction-based religions, are they based on religions which are contained within fiction, or are they religious elaborations upon a work of fiction?
Yeah, that's a good question. You can have both. I sometimes speak about fictional religions as opposed to fiction-based religions. And then with fictional religion, I mean a real elaborate system of religious activity and ideas and so on contained within a fictional text. You could say you have that with Star Wars because you have the Jedi Knight Order within Star Wars. They believe in the Force. Star Wars characters, they greet each other by saying, "May the Force be with you." So that's a kind of blessing, really, which refers to this supernatural power of the Force. So there you have at least the contours of a fictional religion, which the Jediists sort of export to the real world as take as a model for their own real world religion. But you also have other cases, like I'm studying also another group which base their religion or spirituality on the works of Tolkien, the Lord of the Rings, and the Silmarillion, and so on. And the Lord of the Rings itself, you don't have any real established religions. You have some religious ideas, but what the Lord of the Rings sort of has, which you can use religiously, would be the ideas of the elves, for instance. They're just normal characters in the books, but they are more than just humans. They are more artful, more spiritual. They live forever and so on. So they are certainly supernatural or superhuman, but they're not worshipped. So in that way, there's no fiction and religion in the Lord of the Rings, but the Lord of the Rings still has what you could call perhaps religious affordances, elements which can be used religiously. In the Tolkien spirituality, people take the ideas about the elves, for instance, and believe that they do exist on another plane where you can travel to by methods that are comparable to astral traveling and so on. You could also mention the other kin movement, people who believe that they have other than human souls, that they belong to another kind of kin than human beings, and some of them believe to be elves. And there's obviously an overlap between the other kin or the Elven movement and the Tolkien-based spirituality that I study.
Okay, so you mentioned some very popular elements in popular culture there, the Star
right.
Wars and Lord of the Rings. What is it that makes these religions, rather than just really devoted fans?
Now, that's a good question. There certainly is a difference between the two, which is recognized by both fans and members of fiction-based religions. And basically, the difference is that fans, they play with the universe.
Okay.
They can dress up, go to conventions, they like to reread the books or the movies. They can even participate in the universe by through role play, for instance, or by writing fan fiction which expands the universe. But all these activities, they are recognized as play or as fiction, stuff that takes place within a non-real fictional world next to the real empirical world. What the members of fiction-based religions do is that they take this far step further by claiming that at least some of the supernatural elements within the fictional world really exist in the real world. So like the Jediists, when they meditate on the Force, or when some of them pray to the Force, that's something that some Christian-inspired Jediists do, even though you don't find that in the Star Wars movies themselves. Then they take the Force out of the fictional setting and claim that it also that it simply exists and can be addressed and can act in the real world. That's the main difference, and that means that the fans find that the Star Wars fans, for instance, can be a bit embarrassed about the Jediists. They find that they take way too seriously. On the other hand, among Jediists and Tolkien spiritualists and so on, you'll find a very clear idea that what we are doing, that is religious or spiritual, and it's much more than just being a fan. The fans, they are just fans, and that just refers to the fact that they haven't become aware, you could say, of the deeper spiritual nature or potentiality in these texts.
Okay, so the fact, the sort of demonstrable historical fact that a lot of the books which inspire, or books or films, or artwork, etc., which inspire these religions are created by another human being or a group of human beings, does that have any impact? Is that acknowledged by these adherents, and how would they deal with that?
Yeah, it is acknowledged by them, and it is something that they have struggled with. I mean, they all, or most of them, most of them really feel a need to legitimize the practice. They do that in different ways. If we take the Jediists again, there are basically two strategies that they use to handle the fiction-basedness of their religion. Some of them say that the text that most other religions are based on, they are, even though they claim to be true, they claim to be history, they aren't. And in that way, they try to make the gap between a fictional text like theirs, which they base their spirituality on, and the claiming to be history, but not really being so, texts that more conventional religions like Christianity and Islam build themselves on. I mean, they make that gap smaller in that way, and say the Star Wars is a myth, and it's as good as any other myth, basically. So that's the sort of one strategy. And another one is to say that the concept of the Force in Star Wars, that might be fictional, but it refers really to more real religious concepts like Ki, or Rana, or God simply. I mean, they translate the Force, which they take to be a fictional concept, to religious concepts which they do take to be real. So they would readily recognize Star Wars as fiction, but say that we take the identity as Jedi Knights from Star Wars and the term the Force, but the real religious powers that we engage with are those of more legitimate religion, so to speak.
Hmm. So what is the role, if any, of the intention of the author in these movements?
Now, you could say, fundamentally, the intention of the author cannot determine how the works are used. I mean, as soon as it's out there, it can be used in a different way. And that's really what we see with the fiction-based religions, that they are used in a way that's contrary to what the author wanted to happen. But that said, the authors do play a role, actually, both in Jediism and Tolkien-based religion. In Jediism, George Lucas himself has used the term myth about Star Wars, and so contributed to a kind of mythologization of the Star Wars narrative. And he has talked extensively in interviews about the religious inspiration, both from Christianity and Eastern religions, Buddhism, Taoism, which inspired him to create the ideas about the Force and the Jedi Order. So he's been speaking a lot about the religion in it, and what he did say actually was that he wanted young people who watched Star Wars to become interested in religion through the movies. But his idea seems to be that they should be interested in religion, become interested in religion, and then go to the established religions, to the church, to the synagogue, to the mosque, and so on, and find real religion there. He never wanted to create a new religion himself. But, I mean, you could say that he succeeded a bit too well in his religious education project, really. And as far as Tolkien goes, he was a very religious man himself. That is clear, a Roman Catholic, and he didn't claim anything about he didn't claim that his works were religion, though he would tend to use terms like myth about fantasy fiction in general as well, and see it having a certain religious dimension, but still in a fictional form. But he would be prepared probably to compare fantasy fiction, also his own, to the mythologies of different people from Celts, for instance, and then the Nordic mythology, which he also drew on. But that is because he did not consider these mythologies to be true in the same sense as he considered Roman Catholicism to be true, but rather, so perhaps you would say that his own writings, they contain perhaps a glimpse, a bit of a truth that is that could be found in full in real religion, meaning for him Christianity. And next to that, he also had an idea of perhaps being inspired. Really, that is something that many authors have. They have the idea that they don't create their works, they don't create the fictional characters themselves. It also comes to them, and he pondered a bit whether that God's grace or the Holy Spirit might have might be playing a role as the source of inspiration. And that is something that the Tolkien-based spirituality people can use and say that was indeed the case. Stuff did get revealed to him, or he channeled real truths about the real world.
Because once you put something out into the world, other people can then do what they want with your intentions.
Exactly, that's true. But of course, not any work of fiction, not even any work of fantasy or science fiction, develops into a religion. And I mean, one of the reasons that it happened in these two cases is certainly that the author was at least ambiguous about the religious character of his work, or did consider it to have some religious qualities of a sort.
One thing which listeners will probably be quite familiar with is people who put Jedi Knight on a census as a sort of ironic way of saying, I'm not religious. Are you aware of any connection between this ironic use of Jedi Knight and the more sort of serious use of Jedi Knight by a tyrant, and then how do you, we'll say, actual Jedi Knights react to this sort of ironic usage of their term?
Right. I think that it's certainly important to keep these two phenomena apart. Say, on the one hand, what I've been talking about so far, which we could call perhaps religious Jediism, a serious Jediism, and then on the other hand, this playing with the Jedi identity, also as a religious identity. You mentioned the census 2001, where more than 500,000 people stated that they belonged, that their religious affiliation was Jedi. You could also mention that Jedi is the 10th most common religious self-identification on Facebook. So a lot of people are playing with it, and they do so, of course, because they see there is something religious to the Jedi Knight, which is, of course, also true. But I'd say that, at least from the perspective also of the religious or serious Jedi, they would consider those other census Jedi to be just fans.
Mm.
People who are not serious, people who play with it. And, I mean, I tend to go with that interpretation because most of those who put in Jedi in the census or do it on Facebook now, I mean, they do engage in any religious activity at all that could, with regard to this to Jedi identity. They are not members of any groups, they don't do any rituals, and they probably don't do much more than just ticking a box or putting it in on Facebook as a sort of, yeah, for many of them it's sort of a joke. That is also what happened before the census phenomenon. An email circulated that called people to tick the box, partly as a protest to the very question about religious affiliation, but also simply to test the power of the email medium and to make a big practical joke out of it. So you could also see that in later censuses, the number of Jedi has decreased dramatically.
Mm. Right. One final question, we're going to have to wrap things up. A final but quite big and very important question. This is very new research, and it's an interesting, fascinating, and hopefully an important way of reconceptualizing religion. How do you think that this phenomenon of fiction-based religions impacts upon currently more prevalent or more established understandings of religion?
Now, I think in any case that these cases, yeah, one thing is that the challenge is to think critically over, once again, the very category of religion. But more importantly, perhaps, they will strengthen certain theories that are already there, actually, about religion. Especially the notion that religion is a social construction. And by that, I mean actually two things. Not just that religious is a human construct, rather than something that has a transcendent and supernatural source. But more that religion is something that happens in social interaction and negotiation, and that is, you could contrast that to religion as something that is fixed in texts. I mean, these fiction-based religions, they are religions, they become religions because people make stuff that is not religious in itself into religion, and arguably that is what happens in any religion. So I think that these cases can help us to switch focus a bit more from texts or from religions seen as cultural systems, more in the direction of religion or religiosity as an ongoing process of religious activity. And I also think that these cases are interesting study material for the emerging cognitive study of the religion. I think that you could use cognitive theories to ask and perhaps to answer why certain fictional concepts are likely to develop into religions, why they have this potential, and also how that transformation happens.
Right. We could go on for hours here, I think, but we'll have to call it a day. Marcus Davidson, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, that was Chris in conversation with Marcus Davidson, talking about fiction-based religions. And next week, it's Chris again, this time talking to Benjamin Bate Halami on psychological approaches to the study of religion. And we hope to have a few more podcasts on psychological approaches later this year. So Chris and I are just back from the Socrel conference at Chester. That's the British Sociological Association's Sociology of Religion conference. And we had a great time. We recorded 6 interviews, which we will be getting to you as soon as we can later this year. And we would like to extend a particular thanks to Sonia and Don, the organisers, for really going beyond the call of duty to make it possible for us to take part and record so many interviews. We've had a couple of emails in these last few weeks about the possibility of some sort of forum, people saying that they wanted to get more involved in discussion. And it's something we've thought about, but it would be quite a lot of work and possibly expense to set such a thing up. So we would want to know that there really was a demand for it. If you want to get involved in the conversation, there are ways of doing it just now through the Facebook page. You can even post things yourself on the wall there. You can respond to individual podcasts or responses on the website itself. And you can tweet us if there's something that you come across elsewhere on the internet that you think our listeners might be interested in. So please do. If you have been one of the people who have given us a ratings on iTunes, liked us on Facebook, or in any other way supported the project, we want to say a big thank you. And as always, thanks for listening.